Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the head of the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales looks at the aims behind the new motu proprio on the use of the Tridentine Rite. The Church of England looks at ways of strengthening ties with the worldwide Anglican Communion. And one year to go, a look at preparations underway for World Youth Day to be held in Sydney, Australia in July 2008. But first, Pope Benedict helps us to get into the holiday spirit. Welcome to the programme. Pope Benedict XVI has left the Vatican for a holiday up in the mountains of northeastern Italy. The Pope left on Monday for Lorenzago di Cadore near Belluno in the Diocese of Treviso, where he will stay until July the 27th. Before he left on Sunday, the Pope said he hoped this holiday period would be a time of rest and of physical and spiritual refreshment for all. My colleague Charles Collins takes a look at the Pope's words to visitors gathered for his Sunday Angelus address in St. Peter's Square.
Pope Benedict said he hoped everyone can have some vacation, both to recharge their physical and spiritual energies and to regain a healthy contact with nature. The Pope was speaking during his Sunday Angelus just a day before leaving for his own holiday in Lorenzago di Cadore, staying in the same villa which Pope John Paul II used for his own vacation several times. He says he hopes the mountain air will be good for him and allow him more free time to dedicate himself to reflection and prayer. He said that mountains evoke the ascent of the spirit on high, the elevation towards the high altitude of our own humanity, which unfortunately daily life tends to bring down. He also took the occasion to greet English-speaking pilgrims.
In a special way, I am pleased to greet those taking part in the Inter Amnia World Cup handball tournament in Teramo, Italy. The participants in this event come from more than 100 different countries, some of which are in conflict with each other. Yet this peaceful gathering of athletes is an example of how sports can bring us together in the spirit of fellowship between peoples and cultures. Sports are indeed a sign that peace is possible. In today's gospel, we are reminded that the harvest is plenty, but the laborers are few. Let us all pray that the Lord of the harvest will continue to bless his church with confident and generous workers. I thank you for your prayerful presence and invoke the abundant blessings of Almighty God upon you and your families.
The Pope will be on vacation until July 27th. I'm Charles Collins.
Here in the Vatican on Saturday, the long-awaited document or motu proprio on the use of the Tridentine Rite as an accepted form of Eucharistic celebration was released. The document, accompanied by a letter to all bishops, states that the wider availability of the older rite should not detract from the reform of the liturgy begun at the Second Vatican Council. Pope Benedict had already made this motu proprio available to a group of top church leaders here in the Vatican some 10 days ago. Amongst that group was the Archbishop of Westminster and head of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor.
I think it was a very positive meeting. There were a number of presidents of conferences there, and I think the Holy Father wanted to present the document and his own understanding about the Tridentine Rite, and how he wished this to be, as it were, implemented and then accepted by the bishops of the church. And clearly it has more importance in some countries than in others, parts of Europe and America and one or two in Asia. But for most of the Catholic Church, it's not really a very strong issue. But in some areas and some countries it is. And so the bishops who were there, and cardinals, were able to express any challenges they saw in it, or difficulties that might arise.
Such as, for example?
Well, I think the difficulties that might arise in this is, and I think it's not doesn't pertain to Britain. I think we've had this indult in Britain for the last 35 years, and so the bishops like myself and others, all the other bishops, have been giving permission for the celebration of the Tridentine Rite in the main cities, like London, but elsewhere. And on the whole, I would say the bishops have been generous. The people who are of a traditionalist mode have accepted it. And the bishops have always been concerned to preserve the unity of the diocese, the unity of the church. And I think the only danger, which we wouldn't have experienced in England, if there was a group that wanted this, to express their disagreement with the whole of the teaching of the Second Vatican Council. In other words, that saying that there was a real rupture between before and after the Council. Now, certainly in permitting this, this is certainly, the Holy Father, I think, thinks that there are not two rites, it's one rite with two expressions of that rite. So I think it'll be well accepted by the bishops.
Certainly, there are those who feel that this is the foot in the door, if you like, and it is an attempt by the more conservative sides of the church to try and push back, if you like, to a pre-Vatican II mentality. Do you agree with that at all?
I think what's the intention of this is really to achieve reconciliation within the church. There are these groups who have a legitimate desire that the old rite was never abrogated. And therefore, I think the Holy Father thinks, and others do as well, that if that's the case and it is a legitimate tradition of liturgy in the church, then it should be permitted.
There's room for everybody, in other words. You don't see a growing division between what we could call the liberals and the traditionalists in England.
No, I think there are always tensions in different groups within the church. It's been happening since the time, long, long time. I think it's up to the bishop. The bishop is a centre of unity. And within the universal church, the Holy Father is a centre of unity and truth. And therefore, I think that ecclesiology of the Catholic Church, which focuses on the bishop and with his fellow bishops and in communion with Peter, is of crucial importance in every aspect of the church and its mission and also of its liturgy.
My thanks there to Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, Archbishop of Westminster and head of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. Staying over in Britain, the need for a covenant regulating relations between the different Anglican provinces, the process by which bishops are appointed, and relations between the Church of England and the Methodist Church. These are among the important issues being debated as the Church of England's governing body, or synod, meets this week in the northern city of York. The General Synod of the Church of England consists of almost 500 members, made up of the House of Bishops, the House of Clergy, and the House of Laity. As the Anglican Communion worldwide looks ahead to the Lambeth Conference of all its bishops in July 2008, one of the key areas of concern is the drawing up of a covenant to provide some kind of formal structure for the 38 autonomous provinces around the globe. To find out more, I spoke to Father Jonathan Boardman of All Saints Anglican Church here in Rome and a member of the Church of England Synod, which opened its five-day meeting on Friday.
There are important issues for the Anglican Communion in that the Church of England is having its first opportunity to comment on the draft covenant proposal, a covenant for the entire Anglican Communion. The Synod is only being asked to give its opinion about the proposal of a covenant in principle. It's not actually looking at a proposed covenant at the moment. That's going to be worked out by the primates meeting, the meeting of the more than 30 primates of Anglican provinces throughout the world. And then at some stage it would be brought back for legislative agreement, both in the Church of England's General Synod and also in the synodical processes of all the other provinces. Another important matter that will be discussed is the senior appointments in the Church of England of deans, of archdeacons and suffragan bishops and canons. that relates principally to the Crown's role in those appointments. And it's going to be a very interesting debate because we've just produced a report, the Church of England produced a report about that more or less recommends keeping the status quo. But the new Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, has issued a green paper for Parliament suggesting that the Crown should minimise its role in the in church appointments. So that actually looks like a clash between new government and the desire of the church.
There's also going to be some ecumenical business on the agenda, isn't there, particularly regarding an agreement between Methodists and Anglicans?
Yes, it's one of the review moments for the covenant that was signed in 2003 between the Church of England and the Methodist Church in England. It's a five-year review, if you like, and it's looking particularly at episcopacy, the degree to which Methodists would accept bishops in the future if they were to unite with the Church of England, and also looking at the Eucharist. And a lot of the groundwork for the theology in the new report between the Methodist and the Anglican Church in England uses archaic documents, which is a very interesting cross-fertilization of in ecumenical dialogue.
Father Jonathan Boardman there, a member of the Church of England General Synod, which is meeting in York in the north of England this week.
The next World Youth Day will take place in Sydney, Australia.
Cologne, Germany, 2005. On a pilgrimage to celebrate World Youth Day in his home country, the recently elected Pope Benedict XVI announced that the next such gathering of young Catholics would take place in Sydney, Australia. Since then, the Church Down Under has been busy preparing for over 500,000 people who are expected to attend World Youth Day 2008.
The young people, I want to encourage you to prepare well for this marvelous celebration of the feast, which will be spent in the company of your bishops, priests, religious, youth leaders, and one another. Enter fully into the life of your parishes and participate enthusiastically in diocesan and events. In this way, you will be equipped spiritually to experience new depths of understanding of all that we believe when we gather and see the next July.
Those were Pope Benedict's words to young people gathered here in the Vatican recently, and Catholic dioceses across Australia have been taking those instructions very seriously indeed. The World Youth Day celebrations culminate in Sydney from the 15th to the 20th of July 2008, but for the 5 days leading up to that, Catholic parishes, schools and many other diocesan organisations across the country will be welcoming young pilgrims to Australia, showing them something of the history, culture and vibrant faith life of the young church there. As the largest Catholic diocese in Australia, Melbourne is planning a full programme of events from July 10th to 14th, entitled Days in the Diocese. And if you click on their website, did08.com, this is the kind of welcome you'll find.
Welcome to Melbourne. This is our city and our home, and we're here to invite you all to come and start your journey to World Youth Day 2008 right here with us in Melbourne.
In the build-up to World Youth Day 2008, the Melbourne Days in the Diocese is celebrating with an exciting 5-day program with lots of amazing things for you to see and do.
Melbourne's the second biggest city in Australia after Sydney, and there's nowhere else quite like it. It's famous for shopping, eating, fashion, the arts, beautiful buildings and interesting people. So come and be a part of it all. Melbourne's a real melting pot of many cultures and many faiths. It is also Australia's largest Catholic archdiocese. And if there's one thing we all have in common, it's this. We all love our sport.
Well, one former sportsman and teacher who is now helping to organise these Melbourne Days in the Diocese is Tim Davis. He dropped by our studios here at Vatican Radio recently to tell me more about how these ambitious World Youth Day preparations are shaping up.
With the World Youth Days being held in Sydney, we've been asked by the organisers from Sydney's end whether we would support them by providing hospitality and accommodation for pilgrims on their way to Sydney. And as Melbourne is the biggest archdiocese in Australia, we were asked to take on a lot of the pilgrims. And being the city that it is, Melbourne is a very proud events city and loves hosting people and the Australian hospitality. And so we're inviting as many pilgrims as possible to come from all over the world on their way to Sydney and stay with us for a week. The week will involve obviously a time for preparation for the World Youth Day, so time for prayer and some catechesis just within small groups. But it's more about the hospitality and the opportunity to see the living church in action in our diocese.
The Archdiocese of Melbourne wishes to offer the warmest of welcomes and hospitality to all pilgrims travelling onward to Sydney. For those of you living in the diocese, as Chief Pilgrim, I invite you to join me on the journey to Sydney to World Youth Day 2008. World Youth Day is a gift to the Church of Australia, and on your return, I encourage you to take the opportunity to share this gift and continue to be a witness to Christ.
Archbishop Dennis Hart of Melbourne there. Tim, you're expecting up to 100,000 people from abroad, aren't you? I mean, that's quite a daunting figure, even for a city that is used to organising events on a scale of this kind.
Yeah, well, I guess we're expecting probably not all of those will come through Melbourne. They'll be spread around the various dioceses all over Australia, but a large proportion will come to us in Melbourne. And yeah, with our numbers, I guess, we're looking to host as many as possible. So around 25,000 to 30,000 we're anticipating.
So where are you going to put them all? With host families, I presume?
Yeah, it's a good question. We've decided to really focus on staying with families from our parishes and from our schools. We have a very big Catholic education system, and so that's a good resource to draw on as well. But in speaking to many people who have been to various World Youth Days, one of the best aspects has been the days in the diocese, which lead into the actual World Youth Day celebrations, because it's an opportunity to actually connect with people from a different culture, a different country, and actually live with them for 5 days and get to know the mundane, the daily life, which we think ourselves is our boring part of our life. But for international people, it can be very interesting and helps people to understand different cultures and their faith life and how that's developed and sustained.
So you're talking about chances for prayer together, some catechetical things. What about in terms of really teaching people about the church in Melbourne? What are you hoping to show them?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're not anticipating that this will be a mini version of the World Youth Day. It's quite different. Basically, we're hoping to, if you can imagine, a group comes to us from Korea, and we house them in a parish or a cluster of parishes, depending on the size of the group. And then we would hope that in the morning they would meet with other parishioners and their group at a local church, celebrate Mass or a prayer service. And then from then, there are opportunities to be involved in various activities, which include a festival of music and cultural exchange, the opportunity to visit a place like the Tarawarra Abbey, where the Cistercian monks live, to do a pilgrimage walk following Blessed Mary MacKillop, who's we're hoping will be Australia's first saint. So there's a variety of things. Then in the afternoons, on our travels around the world, we've tried to make contact with key leaders in the church, cardinals, bishops, and key lay leaders, to hopefully give a bit of an insight into areas of their interest. For example, Cardinal Oscar Rodriguez from Honduras is bringing a group from Honduras, and he'll be speaking on one of the afternoons. We're hoping that Marianne Glendon will be able to come down and speak, being in Pontifical Council for the Laity and being head of law at Harvard and her interests there. Cardinal Napier coming from South Africa and speaking on issues of racism and the apartheid era that they experienced in South Africa and how that country is moving on. So just a bit of a sprinkling of people from all over the universal church.
To give a real flavour of, as you say, the universality of the church.
Yeah, and for more specifically in Australia, I mean, I think people are interested in, we don't have the religious history that Europe holds, you know, but I guess we want to expose people to aspects such as the Aboriginal culture, sort of the pioneering and missionary Catholics and Christians of our time in Australia as well, and see what they've done and how far they've come in just 200 years, really, just over 200 years.
It all sounds very exciting. There's a major problem, seems to me, and that is cost. If you're talking about young people coming from Latin America, from Africa, how can they afford the journey to Australia?
Yeah, that's something that we've really tried to address, and it's been very important to us, because we don't want this to be an event just for the wealthy Catholics of this world or from Western countries. And so part of the fee, registration fee, is going to a solidarity fund, which will mainly focus on the Pacific region, because it's been unattainable for the Pacific region to be able to get to Europe most of the time because of the expense. So we think that while we have this celebration in Australia, it's a good chance to give them an opportunity to come. Also, it's been really impressive to see the approach of our parishes and schools who've just decided we want to sponsor people from certain countries. One school is called Nazareth College, and so they would like to sponsor a couple of people from young people from the Holy Land to come. And then Brother Mark, who is the executive officer, has been also approaching businesses and business people, and there's been some generous responses with some people offering to support young people who would not normally be able to afford to come down and experience it with us. So
this is going to cost you as a diocese quite something too, but I understand the state is supporting you as well.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate in Australia that, and particularly in Victoria, where our state government are sharing in the costs with the church. It's interesting, the state government take a lot of pride in being a bit of an event state. We have the Grand Prix and the Australian Tennis Open, and we hosted the Commonwealth Games last year and the Olympics way back in 1956. So even if the church wanted to make a mistake, the government won't let us do it. So, yeah, which is, it's great to have that support, because it gives us extra confidence and gives us, provides us with people who have logistical expertise and to make it as smooth an event as possible.
And it does sound as though things are going ahead fairly smoothly. There must be, I imagine, though, people who are dreading the disruption to daily life, aren't there? Some killjoys who are really dreading this as an event, an invasion of people.
I think so. I mean, with any element, with any event, you're going to get an element of people who are not going to agree with what's happening or mightn't see the benefits. But I think it's like I think it was described as a slow-moving steamroller that is just going to gradually build momentum. And I think what often happens and has happened in other cities is that people haven't really known what to expect, but then all of a sudden the enthusiasm builds and they see the streets filled with young people enthusiastic about their faith, about Christ, and singing and talking, and they start to ask themselves, where have these people come from? What are they so happy for? What, you know, and it's really infectious. And we're very sure that as things build up and as the public become aware, secular public within Melbourne, they'll get on board and be very supportive and enthusiastic.
Because the Catholic Church in Australia is not so big in numbers, is it? I mean, what is this event going to mean for non-Catholic young people, non-Christian young people?
Yeah, well, I guess when we talk about particularly the days in the diocese and the World Youth Days, it's unashamedly Catholic, but it's open to all. So we're looking for opportunities where we can involve people of other Christian faiths as well. And so we have an ecumenical prayer service we're holding one day, will be one of the activities. And so we're very keen to engage other Christians. I think we're about 26%, 27% Catholic in Melbourne particularly. But it's a great opportunity for evangelization and re-evangelization of, as in most of the Western world, we seem to lose, that demographic of young people between the ages of about 15, 16, and then some of them don't re-engage until later on in life. And so it's about us reaching out to those people through secular media as well. And we're hopeful that this event, this gathering, Will be a bit of a stimulus for those people, or an avenue for them to come back and get involved with their faith.
You've already got a very attractive website, haven't you, working on this outreach, as you say, to people who may not normally be engaged with the church.
Yeah, we've had some really good people involved in our office in Melbourne who have set up the website, and that's going to be our major portal for delivering information and communicating with people. And then there's a few other initiatives that we're developing too, in terms of, you know, Facebook and MySpace and other avenues which young people are engaged in.
You've also got somebody called Father Stan Fortuna, who is obviously attracting, reaching out on the musical front.
Yeah, that was great. We worked him very hard when he came to Australia, Father Stan. He was just sort of like a bit of a taste of things to come. And it was great, the effort he put in. He travelled to most of the major cities in Australia, and I know I looked after him for basically 2 days, and he did about 12 radio and television interviews and a couple of concerts. And yeah, it was good. I'd never met him or really heard much about him before that, but we had a concert in Melbourne which was very successful, and a lot of young people came along.
Music is a great gift from God, and it's a powerful, powerful means to communicate and transmit both good and evil. Just like the media, there's a lot of cameras that's showing bad things, but that's not going to stop us from using it for the glory of God. And the same with music, all types of music, all genres of music, even rap music. Ain't nobody like a Catholic party, cause a Catholic party don't stop. We on a first name basis in heavenly places, like every family we put names on the basis. The house is big, plenty of spaces, got all kinds, jacks, kings, queens and aces.
Franciscan Father Stan Fortuna there, who's been involved in the build-up to World Youth Day 2008. Tim, what has it meant for you personally to be involved in organising an event like this?
It's been an interesting experience. I've really enjoyed it. I'm from a teaching background, so I was teaching phys ed in a school for children with behavioural difficulties and social difficulties. And so I was sort of plucked from this. I'd been involved with some social justice festivals that had been run in Australia, but I'd always wanted to be involved with organising a World Youth Day, and was so excited when it was coming to Australia. And so I jumped at the opportunity when I got offered a role. And yeah, it's been, for me, particularly in my job travelling around the world, to see the Universal Church, that's been very moving. And it's not so much about the places I've visited, but the people I've met from all corners of the earth, and to have that common faith and that common purpose has been really inspiring. So it's been great for me in that respect.
You say you're from a teaching background, but you're actually a bit of a sportsman, really, aren't you?
Yeah, I did. I played Australian rules football.
Can you explain that in one sentence to our listeners who don't know what Australian rules football is?
Australian rules football is a combination between rugby, Gaelic football and soccer or European football. It's quite rough for the uneducated eye. It's no padding and a lot of body contact. But we're hoping to give visitors who come to Melbourne a good opportunity to go and watch a few games and make up their mind for themselves. They might think Australians are a bit crazy after watching a few of these games. Come together
to improve our lives. What can I say? We wish you all the very best in this initiative, and
thank you
very
much.
To hearing more about it as the months go by. So.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Tim Davis there, one of the organisers of the Days in the Diocese for Melbourne leading up to the World Youth Day in Sydney, July 2008. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.